Welcome in. It's the Dry Heat Check with Jay Coe and Espo. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. It's episode 16. We've been doing this for 16 weeks now, Espo. And episode 16, the nod goes to none other than Willie Mo Pena.
My U of A math tells me that's 4 months.
Yeah, it would be accurate.
I believe so. So that's
it's
good
o facto.
Stuff.
Yeah, good thing you took math at U of A. That helps.
I don't think I did. I think I actually found a way to skip out of math.
I didn't have to take math.
Or maybe I just didn't attend any of those
classes.
I
took one math class when I was there. It was because when I initially was a journalism major, they made you take one math class, but it was math in modern society. And actually, it was an interesting class because it was about math with paying taxes and credit cards and interest rates and things like that. So it was actually kind of interesting. But then I switched off the journalism major, so that class turned into basically an elective.
I was a media arts major, so I watched movies. So that's where the Nick Cage spectrum comes from, which will come back later in today's show.
It's coming back.
I had to get us back on track because nobody cares about why we went to college or how.
But people do want to know why we picked Willie Mo Pena to name this episode after, Espo.
That's because for, like, I think it was a three-week period, he was the best home run hitter we'd ever seen in a Diamondbacks uniform. I actually think it was a bit of a longer period after he'd come up
from
AAA. But, yeah, he was one of those flash-in-the-pan guys that, for some reason in this town, we always remember, and it only seemed appropriate that Willie Mo Pena was our guy.
Yep, he wore the number 16.
And it was a very large number 16 jersey because he was a big guy.
He seemed like he needed a larger number to fill out that jersey. I do remember that.
Three-digit.
And you reminded me, he went on to Japan and ended up becoming a superstar in Japan with his home run hitting, didn't he?
If I remember correctly, I could totally be misremembering that, but I'm pretty sure he went on to Japan, and nobody's going to check that fact. So, yeah, he went on to Japan and became a superstar.
It sounds about right. Other people that wore the number 16. Let's start with the Suns, and it's been a long time since someone wore 16 in a Suns uniform. Rodney Knowles in 1968, Lamar Green from 69 to 74, and Georgie
Glukov. He was one of the first guy from the Eastern European bloc in the NBA, and he basically, now I'm disappointed I didn't realize he was on the list. He's actually my favorite on this because he was a guy who came to America and from the Eastern European bloc, communism, and came here and basically fell in love with McDonald's and basically candy and ate himself out of the league. Everybody thought he was going to be a huge deal. It was one of Colangelo's, they touted this signing as a guy from Europe that was going to be huge. He did wind up huge. It was just because he ate too much.
There's a reflection on our society, I'm sure, a little bit, too. So, Matt, you know, we're still at the point where we could bump Willie Mo Pena.
No, we got to keep – we'll keep Willie Mo.
Let's move to the Cardinals. Rick Camarillo, original punter when the team moved to town, right? And then we've got Jake Plummer, Jake the Snake. Gotta love Jake. We're a fan of his on this show. John Navarre, a former Michigan quarterback that didn't turn into Tom Brady. So there's too bad there. I think they were hoping he would. And then Teddy Williams, a wide receiver from a few years back.
I'm pretty sure John Navarre was in the Denny Green era and played a handful of games when they were trying to find anybody that could play quarterback in that Jeff Blake dilemma of a season.
Yes, it sure was. And then we go to some Diamondbacks. We mentioned Willie Mo Pena already. Travis Lee, the original Diamondback, not just the original Diamondback to wear 16, the original Diamondback.
See, that's not fair because really Buck Showalter was the original Diamondback.
Player. The original
All right.
Diamondback
hey,
player.
Baseball managers wear uniforms and numbers. So I'm just saying.
It's bizarre. Bizarre that they do, isn't it?
Yeah, Travis Lee had a lot of pressure on him to become something amazing, and obviously it did not pan out for him.
And it didn't help that he hit the first home run in the history of the Diamondbacks as well. Reggie Sanders, he over-excelled in a Diamondbacks uniform, part of the World Series team. Connor Jackson is
former
on
number
list.
One pick who flamed out.
And Chris Owings currently wears the number 16.
Crazy to think that Reggie Jackson would have been a much better Diamondback.
Yes.
Reggie Sanders and his heroics in that World Series season, that was 15 years ago.
I know, right? That's the last time any team has won a championship in this state.
Well, the only time
in a major team.
Major sport in the Big Four.
So those are the Diamondbacks. Eddie Olczyk, who's now on the NBC broadcasts. He was in the Coyotes.
I have no clue who you're talking about.
Michael Hanzus, a Czech Republic guy.
Pretty sure you mispronounced it, but all right, we'll roll with it.
What is it then?
I think it was Michael Hanzus, right?
I said Michael, didn't
I? Okay, no, I don't know. Maybe I misheard you. I'm not really paying attention.
Maybe let's go
to
some names we know better, which starts with Mike Solinger. Jamie.
I think that's also Mikkel Solinger.
Jamie Lundmark.
Jamie, yes.
Yes.
Imey, maybe.
Rostislav Klesla. That's
sure.
Right. I know that for a fact.
Sure.
And then Max Domi, the...
Domi,
the future star of the Coyotes, also wore the number 16. We've got a lot of good stuff coming up here on the show today. We're talking Cardinals. They went over the 49ers, and we bring back the Nick Cage spectrum. That'll be good. Rogue One has gotten people a lot of excited. They had another trailer come out.
The final trailer.
People are excited about the next Star Wars movie. So we'll pose the question, what AZ sports story would you like to see told from another angle? Because Rogue One is kind of a different angle of the Star Wars stories.
Yep. Darth Vader actually appears in it. It's kind of the story of the Death Star and how the plans for the Death Star were stolen, which was a reference in the original Star Wars trilogy. Now we're going to see a different angle, and we thought it'd be a fun way to put a twist on that.
Let's put a twist on it, and then we'll then talk about the Phoenix Suns. Espo had a great column about Devin Booker. We'll bring that up, and you also posed the question this week on Twitter: which lineup would you most like to see on the court for the Suns this season? Finally, the airing of grievances will be back to close out the show. But let's go back to the Cardinals. A nice win over the 49ers. It wasn't pretty, but it was a win, and that's all that matters at the end of the day. Drew Stanton, hopefully one and done based on what we saw, based on what we've seen out of him this season, if you include preseason and the end of the Rams game. And it was nice to see Larry Fitzgerald on a more of a national stage like he did on Sunday Night Football at the beginning of the season, still show people that he has got it. You know, everyone's talking about David Ortiz having one of the best seasons ever for anyone in their final year. If this ends up being Larry Fitzgerald's final year, he's kind of on that big poppy, kind of that stage right now.
Well, hell, he'd love if Drew Stanton was the quarterback for the rest of the year because Larry was the only guy he threw to.
Yes.
Like, he locked on to Larry Fitzgerald and just continually threw to him. Which is fine. I'm not going to rip on it. If you're going to have a safety blanket of a wide receiver, it's going to be Larry Fitzgerald.
Now, the Nick Cage spectrum. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first? Because I have a Nick Cage spectrum for this last Cardinals game.
Selfishly, I want to go first just in case you're going to take mine. And then I don't sound as smart when I give you my analogy. But you know what? Since you went to the effort of actually researching the vast film library of the great and time-honored Nicolas Cage, I'll let you go first.
I really appreciate that, man.
You're welcome.
You know what? Let's do a show together every week. You know,
I
appreciate that. I
might be done with this soon.
Yeah, you've got a kid coming. You might find you might not need this anymore. All right. Well, since you so nicely told me that I can go first, I will. This movie on the Nick Cage spectrum was The Family Man.
All right, we didn't have the same one.
Did you remember The Family Man?
It was actually a fairly good movie.
It was a fairly good movie.
It was basically It's a Wonderful Life with Nick Cage instead of Jimmy Stewart and a modern telling of it.
So you mentioned it was a fairly good movie. That was a fairly good win for the Cardinals. It was a win they needed, but it wasn't a great win if you're looking at performance on the field. But the comparison I'm making here is, in the movie, Nicolas Cage is a selfish, self-absorbed guy that needs to be brought back down to earth. So he bumps into someone in a store who gives him an alternate reality of what could have been if he married his young love. And he shows the family, and he learns about himself and learns what he needs to become a better person. The Arizona Cardinals, the all-or-nothing show on Amazon, the Super Bowl hype, they came out, got slapped in the face the first four games of the season and needed to be brought back down to earth. And I feel like the 49er game gave them the opportunity to look back within themselves a little bit, figure themselves out, get right, even though Carson Palmer was on the field. And hopefully it taught them a little bit of what they need to be better from here on out.
Well,
the Family Man, Nick Cage spectrum.
Who's Taya Leone? Who's the love that they went back to? Was it Larry Fitzgerald?
I think it was
because they focused on
it
so much?
Or it was David Johnson, because they really rode him from start to finish in that game. And so I think Taya Leone's more David Johnson. You find that you have an attractive piece to this puzzle. David Johnson is the best piece that they have, not for this season, but going forward, does such a great job for him. I think they refocused getting him the ball and kind of riding his coattails to a victory before things opened up for the pass game and Stanton was able to find Larry Fitzgerald.
So I'm guessing Drew Stanton was Jeremy Piven then, the best friend that just felt out of place in the entire movie.
The dog played a big role in that movie too. Who's the dog in this one?
I don't know. The 49ers were
the dog.
If you watch the way they played, because they basically handed the Cardinals a victory with their turnovers. For me, we're at matchstick men on the Nick Cage spectrum.
Okay, that movie was a little disappointing to me.
Movie, but it's more about the fact that I don't know whether we're being conned or not, and Matchstick Men was all about con men.
Okay.
Nick Cage played a con man. It was all about the life of being a con man, and I don't know if we're being conned that the Cardinals have figured it out, and they will revert back to the team that we saw previously against the Jets on Monday night, or if this is a turning point for the Cardinals. Because let's be honest, the next three games are the entire season for the Arizona Cardinals.
Totally.
Jets, Seahawks, and then Panthers. I believe it's the Panthers. If you come out of there 1-2, you're probably done.
The season's over.
You come out 0-3, you're definitely done. You need to have a statement win against the Jets on national TV to get you back to 500. Then you need to compete against your division rival, Seattle. If you don't win, all right, you're not dead yet. But then you have to win against Carolina. You have to play well, especially if Derek, I didn't find that funny, Anderson is still playing for them at that point.
Yeah.
Okay? Because if you come in and you lose these games, you've lost too much ground, or your perception, depending on how you play in one of those games, could be skewed too. I don't know if last week was the Cardinals getting it back together or just playing such a putrid 49ers team with Blaine Gabbert, who can't do anything, was so bad that they're actually changing quarterbacks this week.
Mm-hmm.
If it was more about them or more about the Cardinals figuring it out.
Let me tell you, I'm of the impression right now, three losses, right?
Yep.
If they lose two more, you still have a conceivable chance of winning your division. If you lose three more, you're looking at a situation where just making the playoffs is going to be hard, because we watched this team lose six games, only win 10, and not make the playoffs 2 years ago. And you look ahead what's on the schedule after the bye week, you're playing at Minnesota. You're playing at Atlanta, who looks phenomenal.
It's a good team.
You are playing at the Seahawks at the very end of the season in week 16, and you close out the season at the Rams. Other games in there, Redskins, Dolphins, Saints, and 49ers, I think are winnable games. But you still have at Vikings, at Falcons, at Seahawks, at Rams, after you play Jets, Seahawks, Panthers. If you lose more than one game, and I think if you lose any games, you're really putting yourself in a tough spot, because you could really only lose one of those last games that I just mentioned and still have a shot to win the division, and only two and have a shot to make the playoffs. Well, so I think all three of these games need to be won so you can give yourself at Minnesota, at Atlanta, at Seattle. Those are three games right there that are going to be incredibly difficult. Just yourself a fighting chance knowing those games at the back end of your schedule.
I think the division's out of reach if you lose to Seattle. You're hoping for a wild card at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where you're at if you lose to Seattle after this Jets game. If you lose the Jets game, hit the panic button. This team is in very much danger of not making the playoffs at that point, which you've went from Super Bowl expectations to, are they even going to make the playoffs? And honestly, I'm already getting tired of talking about this Cardinal season, because, A, so many people had such outlandish, astronomical expectations coming in, and when you're a naysayer about it, you know, that's tiring in and of itself. And then you go in and you're right, and it's boring to watch this team.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hope they come and blow the doors out off of the Jets. But the problem is Todd Bowles knows a lot of your secrets. He was here.
And he has Peter King, who joins Brad here on Sports 360 every week, Peter King said that the Jets came into the season having what he thought was the best defensive line in all of football, which might entirely be true. And you really hope, with what Todd Bowles knows about the Cardinals offense, that that defensive line doesn't all of a sudden get right against Carson Palmer, who's just back from a concussion, and against an offensive line that's missing its two starting guards, a center who is a mediocre at best center, and a rookie right tackle on the far side. You know, if you struggle in the trenches on offense, they're not going to score in the first quarter again, and they might lose.
Look, it comes down to if the Jets defense puts a hurting on the Cardinals, it's on Bruce Arians, because he knows that Todd Bowles understands his system. So he's got to come out and outthink and outcoach Todd Bowles and be creative on offense. They need to rely on David Johnson. Mm-hmm. They enough of this throwing deep all the time in the first quarter. It's not working this year. Work David Johnson into the offense early and often, get the play-action pass working, and get that Jets defense uncomfortable where they can't constantly blitz, which was Todd Bowles' hallmark. That's what he does. So figure it out early, and if they don't, it's on Bruce Arians in my mind.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This is episode Willie Mo Pena, episode 16 of the Dry Heat Check. Let's switch gears. So we kind of prefaced already the Rogue One topic we're going to have, again, mm-hmm. revisiting that in case you're just jumping in here. Rogue One is kind of a spin, a Star Wars that gives a backstory of the Death Star, a different perspective. So we would like to pose the question now, and we actually want to hear from you as well after we talk about it on Twitter. So tweet us at Dry Heat Check, because we want to know what your thoughts here on this topic, and we'll talk about the best ones next week. But we pose the question, what Arizona sports story would you like to see told from another angle? We'll go you first this time, since I went first on the Nick Cage spectrum.
Of course, you put me with the more difficult topic to go first.
And I'm the nice guy, right?
Yeah, look at me. I would actually love to see a documentary on the first year at America West Arena, where you look at the Rattlers, who were a new team that came in and had immense success and packed the building. You had the Suns go through the 92-93 season, which is arguably the single best Arizona sports season that didn't end in a championship. So we're talking just not the 2001 Diamondbacks. I'd love to see that. Then you had teams like, you know, the Phoenix Smash, which we talked about, and the Sand Sharks that were there. I would love to see, just going back and piecing together what that first year in that building was like with all these teams and the stories behind it, because there are some great stories that Jeff Munn has told me over the years and other people that were involved in the building. I'd love to go back and kind of relive that.
Not to mention the concerts that they were throwing in there right from the start too, and some of the talent they had. That's a good one. I'd tune into that. I would love one day to have a 30 for 30 type documentary on the perspective of the Suns from Al McCoy.
Yep.
Unfiltered, and it'd probably have to wait till he's done calling their games, an unfiltered perspective of the Barkley era, the Steve Nash era, the rebuilding that we've seen the last 6 years that hasn't turned into any playoff. I'd love to know Al McCoy's perspective, and not just the positive stuff, the great stuff that, you know, he was in the, wasn't he in the Cinderella Suns documentary?
Very much.
You know, and he had some really interesting perspective. I'd love to know his perspective, being on the road, being around the team as much as he had, and just some of the stories around some of the best eras of the Suns and some of the worst eras of the Suns, unfiltered. I think that would be amazing, amazing from an Arizona sports fan's perspective.
You just described the last 5 years of my professional career, because when there was downtime, Al would come down to the office and we'd have those conversations. I'm not going to tell you what he said. You'll have to wait until the documentary comes out. But it would definitely be interesting. I'll give you that. And that was the other one I thought of, is just Al McCoy. There is really there's a handful of things that you think of when you think of the Phoenix Suns. Purple and orange, when you say that in this town, automatically evokes the Phoenix Suns. The gorilla, obviously, and Al McCoy. Those are the three things that are the Phoenix Suns. Owners come and go, players come and go, uniforms and logos come and go, arenas, and we'll probably see Talking Stick Resort Arena go by the wayside here soon. But the constants have been the Colors, Al McCoy, and the Gorilla for decades now. And I don't think we honor Al enough. And I think I've gone on this rant before. It's time to put him in the Ring of Honor. And I don't care what the excuse is, why we're not. It's time to put him in there.
Couldn't agree more. Is there any else that you'd like to add to this topic? You know, I really liked your America West Arena one. Is there like a story around a team, like maybe a specific situation that you would like to see from a unique angle?
I mean, if we're looking at tragedy, I'd love to see the Richard Dumas story.
Yes.
And really, because in that first year that he played, because people don't remember, he was drafted, I think, in 91, was suspended 2 years. His first year was 92, 93, had a huge season, and then his personal demons took hold. I would love to hear that story. One that most people don't know about that I've always wanted to dig further into, and I think would just make a fascinating documentary or book, is the story of the 1958 Phoenix Giants, the first title, professional sports title ever in the city of Phoenix. They were the AAA PCL team for the, obviously, the San Francisco Giants. I believe they were in San Francisco at that point, and they were the minor league team there. Al McCoy was actually the voice of that team.
Really?
And I believe Moises Alou or Felipe Alou.
Felipe Alou, because Moises Felipe, would have been two.
Oh, yeah, Felipe Alou was on that team as a member of that team. I would just love to hear that story because it's one I don't know real well. I do know Al McCoy tells great stories of how when they were on the road, he'd get ticker tape. You remember, I mean, you've heard ticker tape parades. Well, it was basically the news wire that would come through in this long strip of paper that was being telegraphed from the other city. And he'd get the play-by-play of what was going on, and he'd recreate the game in a radio studio here in Phoenix and would recreate based on what he was getting over this telegraph.
That
sounds so
challenging.
And would have carts where he'd bat, sound of a bat and a sound of the crowd and those kind of things. So there's a lot of just great stories from that I don't think people know. I'd love to hear that. Or some, you know, a documentary on the 96 ASU team would be fascinating too, which I think would be interesting. There's a lot of great stories I'd love to hear more about, and I wish people would spend more time. You brought up the Cinderella Suns documentary. What Tom Leander did with that and the amount of time him and guys like Tommy Arguez and Bob Adlock and other people over at the Suns spent time on, I wish we saw more of that, and I really hope that crew does a 92-93 Suns documentary for next year, the 25th anniversary of that team. The Cinderella Suns is now an Emmy Award-winning production, and I just wish we could see more great stories told like that. We live in an era where everything's short and it's not a lot of depth. I like when we get a little in-depth on those kind of things.
Yeah, no question about it. Let's keep on the Suns, as our next topic is the Suns, who is in the thick of preseason. Their season opener is coming up here in about a week or two here, right?
So the 26th, I believe.
So and with that said, next week's show, if you are a father,
yes, if I don't have a baby between now and next Wednesday, yes,
we plan to have an all Suns preview show of the dry heat check, and it should be a good one.
Yeah, we'll call it a Heartbreak Hotel Edition.
The Heartbreak Hotel Edition.
Dry Heat Check.
Or the Ho Brother.
Yeah, which can sum up both the good and the bad of Phoenix Suns.
So you posed, first let's get into the question that you posed on Twitter this week is, which lineup would you most like to see this season? The one that came to mind for me was, I think what's going to be the future lineup, and hopefully, if things go to plan, the future lineup of this team. And there's a lot that's going to be needed to be seen out of multiple guys in this lineup. Eric Bledsoe, stay healthy, be the face of this team like you were brought in to be. Devin Booker, you're already looking like the face of this team, but if you two can build a chemistry, Booker and Bledsoe, the Suns could be set up for success. TJ Warren, you and I have been talking about him at nauseam because we think that when healthy, this guy can play a huge role for this franchise. like him at the three, put Dragan Bender at the four, because Warren has more of that inside small forward type game mm-hmm. as he's developing the three, yep. while Bender has the outside game, needs to develop the inside. So those two can complement each other on both sides yep. of the ball. And it's time for Alex Len. This is Alex Len's time. I know he's still young. I know that the ship isn't out if he doesn't have a great year this year, but it's time for him to give us an idea of what we're going to see from Alex Len from start to finish in a season. You put those five guys together, you have a nice inside-out game in your front court with Alex Len and Dragan Bender. You have a lot of athleticism. You can get out and run. I'd like to see how well this team can defend this five, and I honestly think that this could be the core group of five that could really try to turn the tide here for the Suns towards the first playoff appearance in 6 years.
Look, I'm going to say this. TJ Warren will be the biggest surprise in the NBA this year because everybody's forgotten he exists. Even Suns fans have forgotten that he exists in the Booker hype and in the Chris and Bender hype. TJ Warren will be a huge surprise this year. Mark it down. You can mark the tape or whatever the heck we record on. The digital audio file, you can mark that bad boy up, and we can either praise me or make fun of me at the end of the season.
Mark your digital notepad your phone. Yes.
I agree with your lineup with one exception. I am done with the Alex Len train. I'm ready to get off. I love Alex the guy. Great guy. Dedicated to the city. I've seen enough on the court. I don't – that lineup with Alex Len at center, I don't need to see. The one I'm most intrigued to see, Bender at the four, Chris at the five. Let's run all the youth out there. Let's go completely young with Bled being the one exception. He's still technically young, but not 26? As young. He's 26. Run those guys out there. I want to see. I don't care about seeing Tyson Chandler play. I don't care about seeing P.J. Tucker play or Jared Dudley get major minutes. I want to see the young guys. I want to see what the future holds, and I want these guys to get the experience they need now. Because if you're going to screw up, if you're going to have a season where it's all right to have growing pains, let's make it this one. Don't wait another year or two and realize Tucker and Chandler are guys that – aren't part of the future, and then we have the mistakes 2 or 3 years down the line. I want to see it now. That's the lineup I am most intrigued to see on the court.
So let's just say you're not intrigued to see Barbosa, Dudley, Chandler, and Tucker in at the same time?
Look, I love all those guys. Those are all great guys, true professionals, and you know, I don't want to see them playing major minutes. I'm not saying relegate them to the bench, never play them, but I don't want to see them playing major minutes. I want to see the youth be the focus of this team.
Now, you raised the question, or you posed, you. Let me rephrase this. You wrote a column this week about Devin Booker, and it kind of had a similar connotation of how we handled the Cardinals at the beginning of this season. While everyone had all this hype and all this high expectations and things like that, we were kind of saying, because we both agreed, this is still the Cardinals. This is not easy to do. No one just writes you into the Super Bowl. The whole season is a grind, and now we've seen how the season has unfolded. You kind of had a similar tone with Devin Booker heading into this season.
Yeah, and let me preface this with saying I am a true believer in Devin Booker, and I think he will be a good to great player in the NBA. He's got a great head on his shoulders. He has a massive amount of skill. But I saw tweets, one in particular from an account. I'm just going to call him out, at Insider Suns. If we still did wet, cold takes, this account probably would have numerous wet, cold takes, because basically what they do is they take tweets from everybody else, claim they're their own, and then every once in a while they'll throw in random speculation. And they made what they're claiming was a joke about, you know, 1996, you know, Barkley left the Suns, a legend. Steve Nash came in to be the savior of the franchise, and Devin Booker was born the next savior. And I'm like, okay. And I've seen other people talk about Devin Booker as if he's the next second coming of greatness here. The road to the Suns' Ring of Honor is a very long and winding road that many people along the way have gotten lost on. We talked about Richard Dumas earlier. If you remember his rookie season, many people thought he was going to be great, and off-the-court things led him astray. Amari Stoudemire was supposed to be the greatest power forward in Suns history. Injuries led him astray, all right? Steve Nash's first stint here was good enough to get him traded somewhere else. He wasn't that great. He had to come back and surprise everybody to become a Ring of Honor member. I just don't want to put too much pressure on Devin Booker because fans have this desire and this need for a superstar that we haven't seen since Steve Nash left. All right, I get it. I want to see the Suns win as much as anybody. You know, it made my personal and professional life difficult over the last 5 years. And as a fan, it's been difficult for the last 6 years. I want to see this team succeed. I want to see a superstar on this roster. But I don't want to put all the pressure on Devin Booker, a 19-year-old kid who had a very good second half of his rookie season and has had an impressive preseason so far, automatically at the realm of being all-time great. Originally, we were talking about him being the next Klay Thompson, and everybody was fine with that. Now we're talking about him needing to be Charles Barkley or Steve Nash for expectations to be met for this kid. I just want people to let him become what he's going to become and be happy with it. Amari Stoudemire was saddled with expectations, and by the end of his tenure here, everybody was sick of him because, well, he didn't rebound enough. Well, he averaged 8 or 9 rebounds a game. We'd kill for that kind of production now. I just don't want to see these astronomical expectations to cause people to turn on Devin Booker, because my expectation this year is he has similar points per game average, maybe even a little less than he had in the second half of last season, but he's more productive and his efficiency is better. But fans are disappointed because he's not averaging 25 points a game. Realistic expectations are all I'm asking.
And I think you're right. I think that if this team is going to have success this season, it isn't because Devin Booker puts up 25 to 30 a game. It's because they have a group of 4, maybe even 5 guys that score between 14 and 24, 14 or 15 and 25, you know, somewhere in that realm. If you have 5 or 6 guys that do that, 4, even 4 to 5 guys that do that, then the Suns could have a successful season. Booker some nights could be at the 14 or 15 realm and they could win. Yeah. He could be at the 24, 25 realm and lose. Yeah. And that might happen a lot. But if for this team to be successful and for him to continue to grow and do what Earl Watson is preaching, it's about the collective unit. He mentioned it with Brandon Knight and deciding to make Brandon Knight officially at the start of the season the team's 6th man and first off the bench. He kept referencing, it's about the collective unit. It's about the collective goal. That's what his philosophy, that's what he's been preaching. If as a Suns fan, you have to acknowledge the collective goal and the collective unit. And it's going to take some nights where Devin Booker isn't going to be the one commanding the ball in his hands. It's going to be a Brandon Knight on some nights. It's going to be maybe even a TJ Warren on some nights. Heck, maybe even Archie Goodwin will come out of a hole somewhere and he'll have some big nights. It's that type of mentality. So I'm with you that if you have these expectations, if you're a fantasy basketball player and you are frustrated and you think Devin Booker is a bust this year because he's not putting up 25 a game, then you're not understanding the process. So I'm completely there with you.
If he averages 25 to 28 points a game, one of two things has happened. He's going to be the MVP of the league because he's playing out of his mind and the Suns are having success because he's done that, or they've had massive injuries again and he's the only option offensively. Those are the only two ways Devin Booker is going to average 25 to 28 points and be looked at as a superstar. He's 19. He's going to be 20 going into the season. Let him mature into what he's going to be. Don't put too much pressure.
The way I look at this Suns team, and we're spending a lot of time and we're going to be spending a whole episode next week on him, so we'll leave it at this. You need to have more expectations and more eyeballs on Eric Bledsoe this season yep. than Devin Booker. Have Devin Booker be the cherry on top. Have Devin Booker be the guy that, oh, man, but, like, he had a great game the other night. Or if he doesn't show up in a game, you don't even mention him. It's, did Eric Bledsoe have a good game? Did Eric Bledsoe have a bad game? Did he show up? Did you see him do this? Did he not do this? Because he's at the point in his tenure with the Suns, at the time is now for him to start getting over that hump, being an all-star, yep. leading this team to some sort of playoff run or any sort of success. It's on him now. He had that. He's missed the majority of 2 of his seasons now because of injury. The last time he came back from injury, he had a very nice year. He was a fringe all-star guy. I think this is the year for everyone to have the heightened focus on him. And if you're going to put pressure on anyone, he's the guy that I think needs to have the pressure on him.
I agree.
Airing of grievances, Espo. We do it every week now. It was going to be something that we just do once in a while, but you just always have something to talk about and something that you need to get off your chest. So we have now dedicate a segment of every one of our shows to you.
I've got ESPN, Zach Lowe in my sights this week because he had a column that came out that was called Zach Lowe's Crazy Predictions for 2016-2017.
Could this also be in the wet cold take realm?
No, because I think he's admitting that these are pretty far-fetched and understands that, but he talks about number 9 on his list is LaMarcus Aldridge's name will surface in trade talks, and he goes on to mention the Phoenix Suns as a team that he could get traded to.
He almost signed with the Suns.
Oh, hell no. Please don't let this happen. Because what's going to happen if that comes up is you're either trading Marquese Chris or Dragan Bender as the player in this. And I could see this playing out where it's Dragan Bender because Marquese Chris has shown a little bit more in the preseason. You overreact on that. You deal Chris, or you deal, Bender. He goes and plays with Greg Popovich and becomes another one of their great diamonds in the rough from the foreign leagues and dominates the NBA for the next decade and kicks the Suns' teeth in. I don't want to see it. You don't need a LaMarcus Aldridge. You don't need a 30-something guy who's on the tail end of his career that is going to do nothing but put you a little bit closer to the 8th seed. All right? And the only reason this would happen is because Robert Sarver is completely impatient. And he seems to have bought into Ryan McDonough's vision right now. But if you get into the season and it's another rough one to begin and these LaMarcus Aldridge rumors come out and Zach Lowe talks about this, then Robert Sarver gets a little antsy and his desire to make the playoffs maybe takes hold. If that happens, you've screwed the Suns for another 5 years. You've done nothing to help build for the long term. If you're going to trade assets for a guy, you've got to find a borderline superstar that can grow with this team, not a guy on the tail end of his stardom that's going to have an albatross of a contract that holds you down. Now, if you'd gotten LaMarcus Aldridge last summer and you didn't go into this drafting two young power forward mode and trying to build through youth, okay. But the fact that you did that, you need to commit to that now. So if this comes true, I will lose my mind, and I'll be more angry at Zach Lowe for even putting this thought into anybody's mind at the beginning of the season than anything. So that's my first.
Oh, let me have some quick comment on that. What has LaMarcus Aldridge done in the NBA other than make an all-star team?
Nothing. He's lost in the playoffs.
He was with Portland. He's lost in the playoffs. And even with the Spurs last year, they lost in the playoffs, albeit he played pretty well for the Spurs in the playoffs last year, and it wasn't necessarily his fault, but he hasn't been a dominating player to get them over the hump. So it's not like you bring him in with the Suns. How much better, honestly, does he make the Suns?
He makes them an eighth or a seven or an eighth seed.
Which, living in mediocrity as an eighth seed is what got this team to where they are in the first place.
Yep, you can't do it.
Your second airing of grievance.
It's a brief one. Uniforms. We've talked about this.
You know what?
Before.
You're right. And you know what? I'm jumping onto your train, but I'll let you finish here.
University of Arizona unveiled new basketball uniforms this week, and unfortunately, they went with the same look of the printer is running out of ink, like they have on their football uniforms. Nobody likes their football uniforms all that much. I'm not quite sure why they decided to take that look and transfer it to their basketball uniforms. Their basketball uniforms have conventionally been a very clean look. Blue, white, red, very clean, very classic.
Yeah.
You accepted that there was always just that kind of classy look. Now they've gone to this ridiculous clown look, and they've added in new color schemes, which you know I hate. There's a red and gold uniform this year, which is a few shades away from maroon and gold, which is your rivals. And I know they say it's copper, I think, but it really looks gold on those uniforms. I don't get it at all, and I don't understand why. Whether it's the team or Nike thinks that they've got to experiment with this stuff. I'm all for cool new uniforms, but these are awful.
Now, I'm with you because my favorite uniforms in the history of uniforms are the uniforms they wore at the back end of the Lute Olson era that won the national championship with through the early 2000s. Just the solid red with the lines on the bottom of the pants and up the sides.
Yep.
Those uniforms are some of my favorite uniforms of any Arizona team ever. And they sort of went back to that with the most recent uniforms they had, but it wasn't fully there. And now they totally went astray. Here's my thing on that. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I don't care anymore. I used to look at these alternate uniforms and different things they do, both from a professional standpoint and a fan, as something that's really cool and something worth spotlighting. I did a full-blown piece when 2 years ago when ASU played Notre Dame and they put out those original gray with copper uniforms. I did a story with their equipment team so they could show me the process of putting it together. They gave me a behind-the-scenes look. I thought it was awesome. I was really into it. I've been the type of person that's always thought Oregon was entertaining because of the different stuff and the creativity. Now, I just don't care anymore, and I feel like it is a tired topic and a tired notion that, you know, it was cool there for a while, for about 5-6 years, especially in college football. Now, it's just like, I feel like people don't care as much anymore because it's happening so much and so many teams are trying to be unique and different, to that it's almost cooler when you see Arizona, for example, you mentioned them for football, kind of have a plain, unique look like they did to honor the USS Arizona for the Pearl Harbor game against Hawaii. Those were just a simple A on the helmet,
clean.
Gray uniform, just navy numbers and red pants. It was simple and clean, and everyone loved them. And I think the reason why everyone loved them was because they weren't out of control, and they weren't non-colors, and they weren't just all over the place. They were more traditional looking, even though it wasn't their traditional uniforms. Yeah. You look at Nebraska when they played Oregon, they wore their traditional red jerseys with the white helmet and the plain N. Like, you're seeing teams, I think, more applauded when they stick to what they really are. And I'm going to be honest, ASU, I think, is one of the main reasons why I'm tired of it, because their combinations don't even match sometimes. The uniforms they shelled out against UCLA this past weekend, those gray with the copper, but with white pants and a white helmet. It looked like a horrible mismatch. When they wear their black uniforms with maroon pants, like, they try to take what they have, but alternate them and change them up just because they can, so they don't wear the same thing every week. It's become a tired thing for me. And I think the team that says they release uniforms, like how Alabama is stuck with the same uniform. Say Arizona or ASU comes out. ASU wore their traditional uniforms against U of A and Tucson a couple years ago. Say they come out and say, we're releasing new uniforms, and these are them. It's the traditional look. I think that would get applauded by more people than not.
Look, I'm going to leave you with this thought. Jerry Seinfeld once said, all sports is rooting for laundry. So make it some damn good-looking laundry and stop giving us this crap like you put on U of A.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This has been episode 16, the Willie Mopena of the Dry Heat Check.